thank you for joining us on the home stretch with Adrian Durant. And tonight we are interviewing Olympian, Jamaican Olympian, Chelsea Hammond Ross. And thank you, Ashley, for joining me again to co-host.
Yes, tonight. I am back.
Welcome, welcome. So Chelsea, another former teammate of mine, another Gamecock from that legendary team, of course.
Bringing all the Gamecocks on.
I know. Well, it's like, okay, I know all of them, but they're all medalists, so it's justifiable, right?
If you know, it's just the, you know, the legacy of them Gamecocks. We deep like that.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. I'm not trying to promote for them too much though, because they're my competition Yeah, we not go dwell on that. But no, so you did the multi, which is crazy because you're always doing a million events and you were good at a ton of events. I always remember you just always doing mad work. Like you worked hard. But you know, all y'all was super, like y'all were a bunch of committed, disciplined, serious athletes. But I mean, world-class long jumper. It's world-class in a bunch of events across the board. So I want to hear about it. I want to hear how you got started. Fellow Jamaican like Aileen, we chatted with her as well. So, you know, tell me about your background. How'd you get started in track and field?
So funny story. So back in elementary school, they would line us up to go to the playground. And then they were like, it's almost like dogs in a pen, you know, like at the racetrack. And they're like, go. I used to race all the boys and I used to beat them. So I used to tell my dad, like, I'm so fast. I beat all the boys at school. He's like, oh, you think you're fast, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fast. So he was like, all right, let's go to the park. So he brought my sister. She's 5 years older than me. He's like, all right, y'all going to start right here, race to the tree. I destroyed her. And she's 5 years older than me. Granted, I mean, you know, she's not athletic, but still, you know, age difference is a big deal when you're young.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, he's like, man, you're fast. Yeah. So we found a local track team and I started running since I was 7 and I didn't stop till I retired.
Man. And before, and I want to make sure I read off all your stats because, you know, 4-time All-American, Jamaican Olympian. 2-time national champ in the long jump. Mm-hmm. Now that's, you know, and of course your bronze medal. Now I'm going to ask you to tell this story about those Olympics, your 2008 Olympics, because it's a really, you know, interesting story about how that went and just perseverance and just everything. It's crazy. So I want to get to that, but I want to ask you about going from, so you're 7 years old, you've been running track. You came up in New York. Which part of the city?
Not the city. So I grew up in Long Island, in Elmont.
Oh, grew up in Long Island. Okay.
Oh, you're in Elmont. Okay. I'm from Brooklyn.
You know where it is?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn.
Oh, look
at that. But people who say they're from Elmont, I'd be like, okay, you're from Queens. But they say like, no, I'm from Elmont. I'm from Long Island. You're from Queens. All right. That's just the bougie Queens.
basically.
I don't know why I thought you were like from Queens, Chelsea.
Probably because so when I ran track, like since I was 7, I always ran with all the city kids because my track team was in Queens. So we always ran against people from the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, you know. So honestly, it's crazy. They even investigated me when I was in high school, but they thought I didn't even live in Long Island. Because I would literally leave and go to Queens and go to practice. So I was there every day. Or I'd go to the city and, you know, at the Army to go train. So they would just see me walking up to get on the dollar van. And they started to investigate me. I'm like, no, I live here. I'm never here. That's all.
I see. So, yeah, because I didn't really know about the track scene in Long Island. But I know that the city was pretty active. So it would make sense that that's where you spent a lot of time. So what was it like going into high school? You kept going through high school, right? Were you still beating the boys then?
Did we get to a point right around like 12 years old that you can definitely tell the difference between a male and a female? So this is a funny story,
hey,
right? I'm not a bully, right? But there was this kid at my school and I used to like hit him in his back. I don't know why. I would hit him in his back. But I used to do it, right? One day, he punched me back in my arm. When I tell you, turned to Linguini, and I was like way bigger than him. And that's when I realized that men and women are not the same. We do not have the same strength. We're not equal in that aspect.
I don't get in trouble.
right. So, yeah.
Okay. And so what events were you doing at that point? Were you specializing yet? Or was it just the sprints or what?
So it's funny. So I've always been a sprinter, the 100, 200. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, as a little girl watching Marion Jones, I was like, I'm going to make it to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And, right. Because I was 12 years old and I was running like 12-1. So like that's pretty fast. So I was like, all right, so I'll get down to like 11 seconds by the time I'm 16. I'm going to be there. Yeah. You know, so I was always a sprinter. I would dabble in the long jump. You know, I would just do it, win it, don't really pay any attention. But I was pretty fast when I was young. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like a few things came into play. I got a little older. I started getting slower. But my high school also forced me to train with my high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't very knowledgeable about track. Just got to be honest about it. Like, she never even been to the armory. She'd been coaching track for 20 years. So once they forced me into that, like, the performance and everything just kind of went downhill. And honestly, I just didn't like track anymore. Like, you know, I had grown up going to JO's, meddling there, you know, almost every year, just like, to nothing, like running times I was running when I was like 13. So wasn't really paying track much attention. But then I was like, this is like my ticket out of here. Like, I want to get out my parents' house. So I was like, you know what, let's try to buckle down a little bit. And you know, I just, what was it? It was, there was a meet out in Long Island. I think it was like Empire Games or something. This is when I found out I could high jump. So it was like after the meet, I seen the bar just ran and jumped over it. And someone was like, you know, that's like 5'4", right? I'm like, oh, it is. It's high. They're like, yeah.
Wait, it was 5'4"?
So, yeah.
And you just ran and jumped over it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just jumped over it. So then I started doing that in high school. So so now I guess I don't remember what I jumped in high school. Probably 5'6". I don't know. 5'6", mm-hmm. 5'8", no, probably 5'6" or something. But it's pretty decent. So started doing that. Mm-hmm. And I started jumping a little bit more. I actually won state for New York. I don't remember what year it is, honestly, but I won state in the long jump. So I guess I started getting a little more recognition now, more for the jumps as opposed to me being a sprinter.
And you mentioned something earlier. You said that you were messing, you were running slower and you realized you were, I guess, messing up and that it was an opportunity. What was the thing that caused you to come to that realization? Because, you know, a lot of times in high school, you don't really have perspective on like how things are going to end up in life. So what was it, somebody or was it an event? What caused that realization?
To be honest with you, I feel like, since I've been a kid, I've been extremely level-headed, extremely realistic, and rational. Yeah, I did dumb stuff, but I knew I was doing dumb stuff. There's a difference between when you know you're doing something stupid and you're doing something stupid and you mm-hmm. think nothing is wrong with it. So, you know, even at that age, I was like, okay, so I want to get out of my parents' house. Can't go to school here. So I was like, I got to get a scholarship. I got to do something. I got to get out of here. So so I didn't necessarily do much to say I'm going to buckle down and, you know, I'm about to go run this or do that to go get school. I was like, I just need somebody to say, come to my track team that's more than 3 hours away from my house. So that's kind of like where everything started. I kind of really just lost the love for the sport. But you know what? Actually, it's funny. Remember back in the day, we had Track and Field magazine?
Yeah.
I remember seeing Mickey and Lisa in there. And I don't remember what track meet it was. And they were holding up a little flag. And I was like, South Carolina? I was like, oh, snap. I was like, I want to go there. So, you know, that's kind of how the whole South Carolina thing came up. But I just really want to get out my parents' house. That was really the biggest deal to me.
Did you... Why? Was it, I don't know the area that you grew up in Long Island, but did you see people getting opportunities to go to college because of track? And what about the folks who didn't, you know, play sports? Were you seeing people have access to opportunities? Or was it just you were like, I just don't want to live here anymore? What was it that made you want to get out of there at that point?
You know, like, you know, I got in trouble a little bit in school. Everybody knows that.
So, being bad.
Yeah. I won't say bad, but, you know, I'm never going to back down. So, and I'll be the one to finish it.
Yeah, you're pretty tough.
So,
you're pretty tough.
You know, I'll just, you know, you went to South Carolina, you know.
Chelsea.
Please don't write her.
But yeah, no, it was just really like, you know, I just wanted some independence, you know. I didn't want the rules. I didn't want any reins on. I wanted to be free. And yeah. I just saw a track as an opportunity because, you know, my dad's been grooming me in this thing since I was seven. He totally wants to see me run. I was just, you know, like, yeah, I'll run, like, whatever, like, I'm not kind of doing what I used to do. I don't kind of like that dream of being an Olympian kind of dwindled away. Cause I'm like, I'm not performing good enough to go to the Olympics. But once I got to South Carolina, I kind of had that like fresh breath of air, that renewal, wait a minute, y'all think I'm good? Okay.
There it is. That's what I was looking for. There it is. So you started losing the love for it a little bit, losing the dream, but you got to a place where there were other people who were good, number one, but they thought that you were good. They believed in you. And so that convinced you like, wait a second, I might be actually good.
Right. The thing is, I always knew I had talent, always knew it. But literally it was like somebody put 2,000 pounds of chains on me and won't even let me train. Like literally we did nothing at practice. So how am I to continue? So let me back up a little bit. So the way it is in Elmont, my high school and junior high school are in one school. So once you get to seventh grade, you're with the seventh graders, eighth graders, ninth graders, 10th graders, so forth. So I've been running varsity track since I got there in seventh grade. I had to do special testing, all this other stuff to get on the varsity team. But since then, they wouldn't let me train with my club. And did no training.
I hear about
that. I guess the performance went down so horribly that it was like all these people putting these hands on me. I know I'm better. I know I can run. But if, you know, we're doing jog, you know, we didn't even have enough people for a relay team. It was only three of us. So it was I was just put in such a bad situation that it was, you know, I'm not about to go train outside of practice. Like in New York, it's dark at 5 o'clock. Not about to be out all night. You know, you got schools. So it's not like I'm an adult at this point. I can just take things on my own, you know, take things and do what I want to do. Take my car and go to practice or whatever. That wasn't the option for me at that time.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I often hear about the conflict between, you know, club coaches and high school coaches and who gets to train who, and your story sounds like, you know, you got caught in the middle there, not being able to, you know, get the ideal situation. But you did compete well enough to still get to SC, though.
Yep. And get
so you must have done something. Because I'm not mistaken, you might have been one. You might have been part.
Oh, you thought I had a full scholarship? No, I basically walked on to University of South Carolina.
Oh, so you and Adrian have a similar story.
Yeah, Coach Fry gave me, I think, books and board or something like that. We had to take care of the tuition. So
I had, you know, no clue to walk on.
Yeah, but man.
What?
So yeah. So
man,
I had full rides other places, but I was waiting to go see what I'm get, and my scholarships were gone at that point. So
You hear that, folks? Don't wait. I know there's some folks who are still in a position here where they can be recruited and they want to wait and wait and wait. You see that opportunity? I mean, it worked out for you, but, you know.
Well, it worked out because she was talented, but she didn't get a scholarship.
Yeah.
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 So it didn't work out in that regard.
Like after the fact, we look back like, yeah, you're an Olympic medalist, so you're pretty good. But you don't want to get put in that situation.
I agree 100%.
My situation was similar. I wanted to go to SC. Like I could have went to some other schools, but I wanted to go to SC. So that's why I walked on there. I don't know if it was the smartest thing, but it worked out. So, you know, is what it is. But
I think it puts you in a great position. I think just being at University of South Carolina, it teaches you so many life lessons that, you know, I think everybody's where they're supposed to be.
Well, so what type of life lessons were you taught?
Oh, gosh. A lot. I think that the biggest life lesson that I learned was communication. So my coach, Coach D, she and I did not get along my first year. Like at
all. I like what?
No, we did not get along at all. like it was bad. It was really bad.
Wow.
But you know, one of the lessons that I learned was she taught me this. I was upset with her about something. And you know, when you're upset with someone and something happens, you want to talk about it right then and there. That's just not necessarily the time to do it.
Cool off.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was a lesson that I've carried with me ever since. So, you know, what I ended up doing was after that year, you know, I went to her office, you know, we both kind of hashed it out. You know, I told her my concerns that I have, she addressed her concerns with me. And after that, we were so good.
Oh,
and everything started working. Everything started flowing. Communication was great. So like, I think communicating with people is one of the biggest lessons you can learn in life because things can go left. It can go right. It can go upside down if you're not communicating. Or if people's expectations are different than what your expectations are. So that was the biggest takeaway. Non-track, anything. But that was the biggest life lesson I learned there at South Carolina.
And that's such a great point, Chelsea, because these days, especially communication, you know, in the era of social media, you know, as a college coach, communicating with the kids, you know, people have an expectation that you will be a communicator, but they're not used to communicating with you necessarily. And so, you know, it's an important thing. Obviously people need to communicate because your situation, exactly. You had beef. And once you guys talked, you worked it out. And I mean, just the world that we're living in today, everyone's shouting at each other on social media, but no one's really having conversations and getting on the same page and realizing that we're all more similar to each other than different. And exactly. We all just want to be happy and live good lives. So I absolutely agree. Communication. Yeah. To do a better, we all need to do a better job at it.
Yeah. Just, you know, how things are today, social media, just everybody's, I feel like, a lot of people's communication skills are just going down because we're not forced to interact with people, you know, like we used to. And sometimes I have to even force myself, like, okay, well, let me not text. Let me just pick up the phone and call.
No, this next generation of people are going to be so much different than when we were younger because everyone is texting. No one does face-to-face communication. It's like, and now with social distancing and all this isolation, everyone's going to be so socially awkward. So I'm interested to see what the next generation of, I think we're millennials, so Gen X or whoever is next.
Maybe something. I'm scared for it, honestly.
Yeah, but. I'm scared. I'm curious to see how it goes.
I'm not scared. I'm an optimist. You know, people talk trash about all of our generations. These kids, you know, every day I still see bright kids and, you know, they still have great qualities. So they'll figure it out. It'll just be different. We'll be the old ones and it'll be different than what we're used to. But I'm sure they'll find a way to make it work and be productive because I see some brilliant kids who are good people every day. So I trust in their ability to figure this thing out. But it is very different. You know, where, you know, I grew up playing outside and do all that stuff in the Caribbean.
Every day. And I force my kids to go outside now. Like, I'm like, go outside. Just because you know, I just want to make sure that I break that cycle with them. I don't want it to go that route.
Yeah. So tell me about now. I didn't mention how far you actually jumped in a long jump because it's ridiculous. Your PR 6.79. That's 22 feet 3 inches. But you actually had a windy PR, which wasn't that windy.
I think it wasn't. That's not windy. No. Well, here's what I'm trying to hint at. There was no wind.
Oh, there was no wind.
Was the
meet in Jamaica?
Yes.
I want to ask you this. Okay. Okay, listen. So, Chelsea, being a Jamaican, you're a Jamaican Olympian, but you were born, grew up in New York, and you represented a Jamaican team, and you're a Jamaican national champion. I'm curious as to whether or not you felt that growing up in the U.S. impacted your ability to make the Jamaican team in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, unfortunately, it's just a reality. You know, I remember vividly at one of the national champs. I won that meet too. That's the meet I jumped 6.87. So I came down the runway, I jumped, and they measured my jump probably about a good 10 inches shorter. I'm like, what are you doing? I was like, my mark is right here. They're like, no, that's where you are. I said, oh, okay. That next time I came down that runway, I made sure I was completely out the park. There was no way you're going to play that one with me. That's when I jumped 6.87.
6.87, that is 22 feet, 6 inches.
Yes, and there was no wind. I know when there's wind. There's no wind. But that also made my jump not technically legal.
Oh man, that's messed up, man.
Politics. Yeah, it is what it is. It is what it is. Y'all know I don't have a filter.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you still show them because you came out victorious at the Olympics. You made the team, and then you made the Olympic team, and then you came out with a bronze medal. So now that you're a walk-on, basically, at South Carolina, what was that first year? Did you think that you had pressure going into conference and making sure that you had money for the next year?
No, I never felt pressure. I felt that once I got in an environment that was going to push me, I knew that we were part of the number one recruiting class in the country. I knew the type of caliber athletes that I was with. And I knew that I was the same caliber. It's just that maybe everybody else didn't know, but I knew. So I knew once I got some training in that I would start to do my thing. So never, ever felt pressure because I knew that, one, I got that urge again to know I can make an Olympic team. I can be an Olympian. When I got to South Carolina, because of all the greatness that I was surrounded by, I had no choice but to get the goal that I thought about since I was seven. Like, oh, wow. Like, we're running track. Oh, there's Olympics. I could be an Olympics. I could be a Flo-Jo. I can be a Marion Jones, you know? So, definitely no pressure. It was just fun, you know, it was fun. If anything, you know, I don't know if everybody else's practices were like our practices, but it's literally like you at a track meet every day.
National championship.
Literally.
That's what Lisa and Mickey also mentioned.
Oh my gosh. Listen, like, okay, so let's say our workout is 8 200s and they want us to run them in 30 seconds. Oh, they're not running 30 seconds. They're running 25s and 26s. That's like, there's a reason. Right. And Adrian, as a coach, you know, there's a reason why, you know, they could run faster, but you want them to either one, get a tempo, or we're not ready to go that fast yet in this season. But no,
yeah,
no. I remember running the workouts and passing the line, like, why the hell are we going so fast? I didn't get it. Especially Siobhan and Tiffany. They were the ones.
Oh, they were the ones
battling. I'm like, oh, yes. Yes. They were always the ones like, come on, guys. but you know, it was good though. I was in the back, you know, but I knew they dragged me through. I was good.
Mm-hmm.
But you were a hard worker. You were multi, man. I can't, like, maybe when it comes to just running, but you did everything though. So you high jump.
Yeah, I got the practice before everybody else got the practice. Yeah. Y'all was still in class, but I was at practice. And I had morning practices.
Yeah. What made you decide to do
that? I never decided to do that. Never wanted to. They made me do it.
You're good at too many things.
Hey, so listen. So, all right. So, so I told you I saw the magazine. I saw Mickey and Lisa, right? So, the type of person I told you I was a little ahead of the game. I went and called up Coach Fry. And I was like, "Hey, my name's Chelsea Hammond. I run track in New York. I want to go to your school. Call me back." Right? So I finally get a call back. Coach Brown calls and he's like, "Hey, Charles, blah blah blah. We want to get you down for a visit. This, that, blah blah blah." So I was like, "Cool." So I came to my visit and everything, had so much fun. Perfect fit for me. So then I was talking to Coach Fry. He's like, "Hey, I want you to go try the pentathlon at Nationals." I'm like, "At Nationals? Like, that's where you want me to do my first pentathlon?" Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, never hurdled in my life. Doing a pentathlon." I ran 13 seconds in the 55 hurdles.
Oh.
I mean, you never did it before.
I never did it, but I still got fifth.
Fifth overall?
Yes.
At the national championship.
Everything else was good.
Yes, first pentathlon, National Scholastics. I got fifth in the pentathlon.
Yes, you're an amazing athlete. So after that,
he was like, "You a multi." I was like, "But, you know, I know I can't be fast. You know, I can jump." He's like, "You'll jump too, don't worry. But you're going to do this multi." So I hated it.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I like to win and all, but... You know, somebody gave me an analogy when I was a kid, and you know, naturally I'm a sprinter. I don't have that wind. I'm not that athlete. And I remember them saying, like, that. "Would you ever drive a Ferrari across the country?" And you're like, "Of course not. You're gonna go get, like, you know, a comfortable car, cruise a car, you know, something like that." And he was like, "Cause he was like, this, you're not built for it." But, you know, I'm good at it, but it doesn't mean I should do it. Like, when I got to college, I gained almost 30 pounds.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is, too, I have a naturally small frame. My body's not built to be that big. So just carrying all that weight and all that other stuff, it was rough, but it made me tough as hell. I'll tell you that. It made me, like, up here, it'll get you right. It'll get you right because the heptathlon is not for the weak.
It's not.
No, yeah, it's not for the weak.
So now that we know you don't like it at all, but what made you specialize in the long jump out of all the events you were good at?
I love jumping. I love the long jump. I'm a like basketball player too. So I love jumping. If I could have just jumped at South Carolina, I probably would have went pro my sophomore year. I probably really would have, because I had too many things that I had to concentrate on. So you can't put your time towards it. So, you know, once I got out of school and I could actually focus on it, that's when everything really started to accelerate. And I started learning more about the actual event, which was like super, super helpful. So.
Yeah. You, when you transitioned to being a pro, you focused on the launcher primarily.
Yeah. So I didn't do anything else. I didn't high jump. And honestly, I probably should have started running again. Mm-hmm. So when I finished school, I knew. So I was one of those athletes that they're always saying, "Oh, you know, we think Chelsea Hammond's going to take it at Nationals. You know, she's jumping so well, blah, blah, blah." And then I get to this big stage and I just wouldn't perform. And, you know, hindsight, knowing what I know now, one of the reasons I was such an inconsistent jumper is because I didn't know what I was doing to jump far. I just happened to jump far. So, you know, once you already have that pressure, you know, you're in a big stage and you just hearing them talk about Chelsea Hammond and blah, blah, blah. Then you get there and you're like, "Why the hell I just jumped like 20 feet?" Like, you know, you don't know. I didn't know what I did to jump far. And that was like the biggest difference when I went pro. But I knew that I could jump. Like, I jumped 21. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I jumped. I'm trying to remember. No, I jumped high 20s in college. So I knew I had 21s in me because I scratched them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, all right, well, you know, if I want to take this to the next level, mm-hmm. I got to do something different. And that's when I decided, like, I got to get out of South Carolina.
Yeah. That's a big improvement.
I got on my phone like I do. Yeah. Yeah.
And so
the thing is too, like, you know, I don't know. No, go ahead.
No, because I want you. I know you ran into Dwight, right? You started working with Dwight Phillips. That's
yeah. You remember, like I told you, like I'll get on the phone and call somebody.
Yeah,
I hunted his number down somehow, got his house number, and I called like, "Hey, can I speak to Dwight?" He's like, "Hey, this is he." I was like, "Hey, you know, my name is Chelsea. Can I come? And can he coach me?" And he's like, "Yeah, come on down." I was like, "All right, I'm down, and I'll see you in practice."
Oh man.
Was this in Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah. I packed up and moved to Atlanta because one thing that I learned at South Carolina, they always say train up. So mm-hmm. if I want to make an Olympic team, if I want to get an Olympic medal, you might as well go to the person who already has them.
Ooh.
You want to learn something, go to the person who did it. So ooh. I went to Dwight.
I mean, that was a smart move and a smart way to think of it. If you want to go medal, go to the person that has them.
And he had plenty, so.
Yeah, and props for Dwight to being open.
That's
to,
what I did.
Props for Dwight for being open to, you know, taking you under his wing and work. I said props to Dwight for being open to taking you under his wing and working with you, too. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would love to work with a Dwight, multi-time champion.
I know. It was really a blessing, like. I didn't know how the conversation was going to go. You know, I'm this little girl from South Carolina and, you know, he's already decorated at this point. And just for him to be like, and you know, he's like, yeah, shout it. Come on down. Like, yeah, I got you. You know, I just appreciated it so much. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm about to soak all of this in. I was like, I'm about to learn my craft and, you know, I'm going to just really go for it. I'm really going to go for it. And, you know, I really have to thank, you know, Dwight and, you know, my other training partners just for, you know, allowing this dream to come to life, because it wouldn't have happened without it. Where I was, you know, mentally, physically, everything, I needed something else to propel me. I needed to learn more and he was able to teach me so many things. So even just advice going into the games, that's what mm-hmm. changed the game. Literally what he said to me before I jumped.
Mm-hmm. But you had to make a decision. You had to get on the phone. You had to find his information and you had to get on the phone and you had to contact him. And that's a piece that folks got to highlight. Like, you have to do something, you know?
Right. It's not about to fall in your lap.
It's not just there.
Yes.
Right. Nobody has to do something. Right. Nobody becomes great overnight. You know what I mean? Nobody becomes great by themselves. There's always somebody. There's always something that's behind the scenes. Like we don't do these things on our own. No successful person has did anything on their own. There's always been somebody who's helped them.
Preach.
Yeah. Wow. And now that you met up with Dwight, you guys are going into the Olympic Games. What was that year training up to the Olympic Games, national champs, and then making the entire team?
Man, it was crazy. So I started training and y'all probably won't believe it, but literally they had to teach me how to jog. My form was just like not good. It was all over the place. My positioning, my arms, my form, everything. So we literally started with learning how to jog, then learning how to run, learning where that everything is intentional, your foot placement, your hip placement, your arms, how relaxed you are, where your eyes are focused. Like, we paid attention to so many small details that honestly, you just can't get in a college program. There's just too many athletes. But once you're able to, you know, slow down, get the full attention that you need is when you're really going to get the potential out of you. So, you know, it was definitely a transitional year. But I did believe in my coaching. That I definitely believed in. So my first meet, so you know, I'm out here, I'm working full time. I'm working 40 hours a week and training. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, like, oh, it was so bad. But, you know, you start to put everything together. You get to your first meet and you jump 592. I don't know if y'all know what that is. That is horrible.
Let's trans 592. That's probably like what, 19 feet? 18?
No, 18? I think it's worse than that. I think it's
18
like,
feet.
I think it's like 17 feet or something like that. I don't remember. It was not good. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. It was horrible.
19 but feet, 5 inches. You can't jump.
It was 19. Feet. Well, I just remember it not being good. Right. So I opened up the season with that and I was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible.
And this is 2008?
Like, no.
This is
like,
the Olympic year?
Seven. So this is 2000. This is 2007.
Okay.
2007.
This is world championship year.
This world championship year in Osaka.
Okay.
So, you know, after that, like, you know, I had friends, family, like, man, hang it up. Like, what are you doing? Like, you jumping 19 feet. Like, go get a job.
After the first event?
Yeah, my first. Right.
People would tell you to quit.
Like, go get a job. Yes. Yes. Told me to quit. Hang it up. Get a job.
Go get a job.
Like, everybody doesn't go pro. Like, don't. Yes. They would get a job. So I'm like, no, I'm not getting a job. I have a job, actually. And I'm going to make this work. The thing is, when you're working on things, you may not get that full result yet because you haven't put the pieces of the puzzle together. But I had started getting the top bottom part of my puzzle when I jumped 19 feet. So once I started getting the other part, then the other part, then the other part, then we jumped 22 feet. So mm-hmm. It's all about one, being patient, trusting your coaching, and then just putting everything together and just know that, you know, your first meet, it may not be a PR. That may not be it. So, you know, it was just very challenging. It was very challenging, but you know, I ended up jumping. What was it? It was the third, when I jumped 22.8, it was like the third best jump in the world at that time. And you know, I started getting phone calls. They were like, my bad. I'm sorry. Like, we were wrong. Can't believe you did that.
Well, at least they called and apologized. That's good.
I appreciate good. It. I can talk to you again now, right?
Yeah, because you did jump 19 feet. Like, you know, they probably were looking out for you a bit. Like, they thought they were looking out for you.
Well, it's all about a process. That's one thing as an athlete, I feel like no one understands. Outside people don't understand the process. If they a coach don't. Or another athlete, they'll be like, oh, it's your first meet. You probably loaded. You probably been training a lot. It's okay.
Exactly.
As you said, you were building your puzzle. But outside people be like, yo, this is what you're doing all that work for?
Yeah. But even
like, for
real? Right. Right.
But even if you that's know exactly, that you're exactly. sore, even if you know that you're sore and you're loaded, doing badly sucks. Like, yeah, you know, Ashley, if you went out there and ran like a 27 in the 200, you know.
27?
Like, you would just, that's how Chelsea knows. She said seven, Chelsea said 17.
27 in spikes.
But you gotta remember,
I would
though.
Definitely, I wouldn't even just don't put you put my name next to that time. It's done.
It's no different in the jump.
Yeah,
it's no you different like than 18, jump. 19. People in high school jumping 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it, Adrian, I think it was 18 something. It might even been 17. I'm telling you, it was horrible. It was
Ashley,
horrible.
That's like a 26. That's like a 26.
26 seconds
it
in the
yes.
like, I have to be no, like, it really, I have to fall. Somebody
action. Chelsea jumps 22.
The thing
six.
Is, okay, yeah, what y'all gotta understand. Listen, the jumps are not the same as the sprints. They're not the same. You'll have Tiana, right? Tiana's jumped 22 feet. But I think that same year, I'm almost positive, same year, she was jumping like 18 feet.
Yeah.
And remember, she's like a 10 second 100 meter runner. So like the jumps, you got to remember, we're running from like 100 feet back. We got to time everything up to hit a 6-inch board. It's not the same as like, you know, just running a race. Like you said, most people won't run 27 if you're a 22 second runner. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you run 24, that's probably more, you know what I mean? Like if you're a 22 second, you run 24, it's like,
yeah, and, doing that in high school. And that happens.
That happens. That definitely happens. And then the next week you could go out and run 22. But if your series is just like 5 9s out of the 6, then you know, like, okay, I'm putting something together. I'm a little bit loaded. I'm a little bit off.
Yeah, but you know, that's just the enemy coming trying to discourage you. And you know, listen, if you out there doing all this work and you jump that, you're like, what's going on? But, you know, my coaches were like, nah, like, you're good. Like, this is what we've been working on. You executed that. Once we keep adding the other things, they're like, you're going to jump far. Yeah. And that year, I had been jumping 22s in practice all day.
Yeah.
All day at practice. So people were like, oh, my God, you jumped 22. Man, I jumped that in practice. Like, because what I started telling myself was, a track meet is no different than practice. I go to the track meet and I do what I do at practice. So if I jump 22 at practice, I'm going to jump 22 at the meet because I'm going to do the same thing I do there.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, no, that's so now you're jumping 22s. I want to hear about the 2008 Olympics.
Man, we got to back up. Remember, that was World Championship.
Oh, man, we're not there yet. Okay.
No.
I got excited.
No, but so listen. So that's World Championship year, right? I feel like I'm on top of the world. I'm third best jumping in the world.
Okay.
And then I'm at practice like, man, I'm about to double hitch kick. I'm going to jump like the boys. Man, I hyperextended my knee and it was over. I chipped off part of the bone. And I was out for the rest of the season. Out for the rest of the season.
You see, in high school, you learn that boys and girls aren't the same.
Man, y'all better stop.
See, I don't understand that. I clearly didn't get the message when I was giving them licks to my friend.
Exactly. Didn't get the message. You didn't learn it then, and then you're going to come 20
try
years
to go
later,
out there.
The same thing.
Chelsea.
I'm over here like, I'm about to double hits kick on these things. Like,
well, you know, you're teaching the young folks, no matter how good you get, you can still make silly mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, after that happened, I was just like distraught. Like,
I bet. Yeah.
I felt like I made it. Like, I've proven myself that I'm a high caliber jumper. I'm supposed to be amongst everybody, especially when everybody's like, you ain't gonna make it to the Olympics. Like, you good, but you ain't that good. You know, so going into 2008
was a
challenge.
Hold on.
A lot of people don't know. I only trained.
Hold on. Now, I want to get the timeline right before you go past it.
I can't hear you.
I want to get the timeline right before you go on. And so 2007, World Champs, that's around August. When exactly did you get injured?
It had to be after... Jamaica trials.
Won the trials.
Yes.
So you're the national champion. You're jumping 22 feet. It's the world championship is in a month, and you went out there and hurt yourself. You chipped what was the injury again? You chipped the knee.
So I hyperextended my knee and I actually chipped off part of the bone.
Oof.
So they're like, we see the bone floating in there. But there's nothing we can do. Like, when I tell you my foot, I had to go to work that night because I told you I was working 40 hours. My knees swelled up so bad. Like, I couldn't walk. It was just really bad. And I just was like, I can't believe this happened right now. Like, I was I'm supposed to have my ticket.
You're still working 40 hours?
40 hours.
So you're not getting any support from Jamaica
now?
At this point? No, I mean, at that point, you were working 40.
No. I was still waiting for them to tell me I'm going to make it on the team.
So you won the trial.
It wasn't a done deal.
You won. They didn't tell you you were on the team. You're not receiving any support. No. You're working 40 hours. And a month before the World Champs, after you won the Jamaican National Championship, you get hurt. Whew.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I was distraught. But, you know, I had such a great support team. Like, it wasn't even funny. Like, they were like, listen, we about to rehab, we about to get back, and we about to lay them hands. Like, that's what you're going to do, Chelsea. Uh-huh. Like, you about to lay them hands. So, the crazy thing is, a lot of people don't know, I only trained on the track 6 months before the games. That's the only training I got, was 6 months. I was literally in the pool that whole time. So whatever they had on the track, if they had 800s or 600s or whatever, and we had time to run them in, I just ran it in the pool. Every day I was in the pool. And the crazy thing was, I tell you, there's some salt out there. So my first day, I begged, I was like, hey, can I get on the track? Can I run? They're like, I don't know if you're ready yet. And I was like, man, let me just hop in these repeat 200s real quick. I hopped in those repeat 200s. Like, I ain't never skip a beat. I was beating everybody who's been training the whole time. Mm-hmm. So, and they were mad too. Oh, they were mm-hmm. mad that I wasn't even on the track and I came out there. So that's right, well, like almost exactly 6 months before the games, I was able to actually get back on the track. And then, you know, training was just going really, really well. One thing that Dwight taught me was that everybody out here is fast. Everybody's fast. Everybody has talent. The difference with who's going to win, who's not going to win, is up here. Literally, because we all fast. We all could jump far, but what makes you a little different? And he was like, Chelsea, every day, he was like, do your approach in your head every day. And I literally practiced in my head every day, my whole exact run. I knew what my runs were. I knew where all my check marks were. I knew where I was supposed to be in my body position, where I wanted my eyes to focus at a certain time. And literally, once I got on the track, it was like I never left. Mm-hmm. It was like I had been there the whole time simply because I was practicing in my head every day. Every day. So once we started getting that, like, they got me so fast, it wasn't even funny. Like, if I would have ran, they were like, Chelsea, if you would have ran 100 that year, they're like, you probably would have ran 11-1. And I remember when we were at this is back forward into 2008 at the games. You know, we're in Beijing for like a month and a half. So we training. I remember Safa came over to me. He was like, Chelsea, why you don't run? I was like, what you mean? He was like, you fast as hell. Like, why you don't run? Because I've made the Olympic team in the four by one before for Jamaica. I just didn't end up going. So like, and I like I told you, I was fast when I was younger, but once I started getting the training and learning how to run and being intentional when I ran, man, that's one of the only regrets I have. I have two regrets. One regret was that year I didn't run a race to really see how fast I was, but I was rolling in practice. And then two, that I never got any of my 23-foot jumps legal. That will always haunt me. Even at the games, I fouled a 23-foot jump by like nothing. When they played it on the screen, it was like this. And I was like, oh, that was my like gold right there. Like literally. But, you know, those are the cards I was dealt. So, you know, you just go with it. Like, give you lemons, I'm going to just drink a lemon shot, you know? Yeah.
So 6 months out.
So now you're going into the games. What was the Olympic experience like? Because those six jumps, a lot goes through your head. I've been on the sidelines when my best friend jumped at the world champs, and I'm just like, yo, it's not time yet. Like, I could just imagine all the thoughts that could go through your head during that time.
There weren't really any thoughts. Like, you know, I literally approached all my track meets, let it be, you know, Mount SAC or the Olympics. I was at practice, and that's really all I saw. The only thing that kind of messed me up a little bit was I was away from my coaches, you know, for basically a whole month. So Dwight wasn't there. Coach Deleuze wasn't there. So I was basically training on my own. And I had came back from the circuit early because I wasn't jump. I was jumping well, but I wasn't jumping what I wanted to jump. So I said, cut the rest of the schedule. I'm going back to headquarters and we need to get this right, because I'm not about to be out here playing and I'm jumping 20 feet or, you know what I mean? So, so it was just a little tough being out there, not with my coaches and everything. So by the time, Coach Celez was able to fly in, we started working on some things and getting all those cobwebs out. I was also, I didn't compete enough either. So I was lacking just competition. So, you know, the day that I had to jump, I really didn't have any pressure. I just knew that I had to put my jumps back together, get to the finals and get myself another opportunity to get on the podium. So that's it. I really didn't see any pressure. I love stuff like that. The bigger the crowd, the better.
So take us through the comp. We're there, right? The Olympic Games, you get there. Take us through the six jumps.
So let's back up to the prelims. So I was the last person into the finals. I jumped, like 660. The last person. But I didn't care. As long as I got there, I got them other three jumps. I was good. I just had to really dust off those cobwebs. So anyway, so I get notified, I jumped, there's 2 days apart. So in between that time, Russian girls got caught with drugs. So they're bumping up somebody else. So I was like, oh, she lucky. She even got an opportunity to get up in this final. So anyway, so it's the day of the finals. You know,
Don't skip past that. You were in what position? Well, hold on. You had your three jumps.
Yes, I was in.
Because you're skipping past the story. We got to go back because.
No, the part of the story is the final day. That was just the prelim.
But
day.
Even getting to the prelims, that's that because someone got eliminated.
I made it to the final.
What's that?
No, I made it to the finals, legit.
I thought someone else had. Okay, I thought someone else had.
Yeah, but then somebody got caught with drugs.
Yeah.
So I bumped up to the 11th position.
And rather than the 12th.
They let Blessings from Nigeria in. She was now the 12th position.
Okay. Oh, so dope. you were sitting in the 12th position, which is the last position to make the next round.
Yes.
And someone got popped for some drugs, and that moved you up to 11th. So now you were in there already, but you're in there. And Blessing got in as well. Okay. Okay.
Right. So I was just like, I just named my six jumps.
Yeah.
So I called Dwight. And I'm like, I call him white, but he got them pearly white teeth. So,
oh my God, I get on him for those teeth too.
Right. So I'm like, white, what do I got to do to win this thing? And he like, you go out there on your first jump and you put that fear in them. I was like, all right, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to put that fear in them. I was like the third jumper or something like that. So I went out there and I popped off at 22.79.
Woo. What's that in meters?
That's
22.3.
Yeah, 22.3.
But I'm in meters.
Huh?
In meters.
679.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had that. So I had been, what position was I in that whole time? I think I was in third position the whole way.
So you went from 12th to 11th. To sitting in third.
The whole time. Right. So now I'm in third position. I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to get a medal. Like, yeah. Right. Next thing you know, Blessing from Nigeria pops off the big jump. And she passes me. And I'm sitting here like, you weren't even supposed to be here.
So she came in. She was.
You didn't even make it in the final. Like you just came past me. Like no. But we had no jump. And then like you know I'm over here still trying to put everything together, and I get the jump right. I get it right, and then I scratch it. But I'm talking about like maybe a centimeter, and it's 23 change. Like the crowd was like, oh, and I was like, oh, I got it. Nope. Wrong. she ended up passing me. And you know, the irony is like, you weren't even supposed to be in these finals. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't even make the finals, but
that's a
you
good
know,
story for her.
It's a great story for her. Yeah. Horrible story for me in so many ways. So one, I'm missing a podium at this point.
Oh,
and the crazy thing is too, because I competed the second to last day and the last day of the games. And I didn't go to any of the meets because I'm resting my body. You know, yeah. I'm chilling in my room. I go to practice. I come home. That's it. So I'm sitting here watching like the meet on the TV like, it sucks to be fourth. Like you just came so far. You just right there, but you can't, you know, like you look at it, but you can't touch it. And then here I am fourth. I was hot. I was so mad. But you know, it kicked in later on that night that I was like, you know what? You fourth in the world. Like that's something to applaud with. And it wasn't even like, it was like a hoax fourth, you know. I went and looked at the record books, you know, to get a big old book with all the records. Anybody who's going to get top three, top four, they're jumping 22 up. That's it. There's no nothing else that's going to get you in there. So I know like I competed well, and I know that the quality of jump that I did, you know, was something to be recognized. You know, it wasn't a little pump jump that I did. So, you know, I was still happy. And then, you know, like you fast forward, like what, 10 years later. And let me back up. I'm also pretty pissed off at the meet anyway. I got people who just came off drug bans winning. You know, you're looking here like, and you, I know, we know what people are doing. Let's just be honest. You know, the athletes that's doing stuff. And I already knew like, You dirty. That's why all these Russians got popped after the fact.
Woo.
Because you were dirty.
Woo.
So, you know, next thing you know, I get a message. I don't remember who told me, but they're like, man, you got the bronze medal. They were like, the girl who got second at the games for 2008, she got caught with drugs.
How long after and the I'm fact?
Just, huh?
How long after the fact did you get
like,
this message?
It was almost like 10 years.
So 10 years after the fact, you get a message saying the girl who, what place did she get?
She was second.
She got second. She had gotten popped.
Yes. Not surprised. I was not surprised at all. To be honest with you, I left that stadium to go get drug tested. And I was walking with my bag. I was like, I'm about to get popped. I'm still getting my medal before I leave here. That's literally what I said to myself. I was like, one of them's going to fail their drug test and I'm going to get my medal. But, you know, it just took like 10 years for that to happen.
10 years to get your medal.
10 years to get your medal.
Wait, you don't what? Hold on.
I still don't have my medal.
Wait. Okay, see, this is why we have a podcast. You hear this,
yep,
folks?
You got to advocate for your medal.
You don't have your medal. You don't have your bronze medal that you should have won on that day, but somebody was dirty out there, juiced up, and now 10 years later, they're popped, and they still haven't sent you your medal?
Still haven't sent my medal.
And it's like, been longer than 10 years.
Yeah, it's definitely been longer than 10 years. It's like, you know, you put in all this work, you got this dream. You know, part of my visualization for my practice was also me winning. It was me being able to stretch my flag out, represent Jamaica, the best finish Jamaica's ever had in their history in the women's long jump. Like, you know, I was waiting for my bonuses. I'm waiting for all these contracts that's lined up, you know, to get a medal. And I'm robbed of it, literally. I wanted to hear, you know, our anthem. You know what I mean? Like this, I want to stand on the podium. Like all of these things were like literally robbed. Money, just, you know, having a medal, just all this work, all these times that you know, you're about to pass out at practice, you're throwing up, you can barely sit on the toilet because your legs are hurting so bad. You know, like all of this work and it's stolen from you. like snatched.
Yeah, don't worry though.
People not doing the right thing, and I still don't have a medal. Like I gotta beg for something that I work for.
Nah, we gonna get you your medal. Don't worry, we gonna make.
Were you signed at that time? So,
nah, we gonna go ahead. You hear this, folks? We got I don't know if it's the Jamaican Athletics Federation that needs to contact the IAAF and the IOC. Somebody, please send Chelsea Ross her medal that she has earned. Please, thank you. Before we have to come after y'all.
Listen, if I ever get my medal, I'm going to put on my bodysuit that I had on
and take a picture.
I'm gonna get my flag. I'm gonna run around my house and do my victory lap.
They need to set up a photo shoot, man. What's the other IOC do with their money?
Now so they can see you and everything.
I didn't hear the question.
No, I was saying it'll be cute because you have children now, so they'll be able to see you in all your glory and everything that you worked for. But were you signed at the time?
Yes. I was signed with Puma. The best, like that Puma is like the most amazing company to work with. Like they were literally amazing. Pascal, he saw all the potential in me. Mm. All of it, and he showed his appreciation, and they stuck by me, you know, after I got hurt and everything. I really appreciate them so much.
Well, did they honor your bonus structure after the
bond? Oh, nah, I didn't even look into that. To be honest with you, I didn't even look into it. I just want my medal.
Yeah. No. Yeah, we got it. There has to be something that can be done about that, especially these days in 2021. What? We just get a little noisy on social media, man. We get you your medal, man. That's not right. That is not right. This is an Olympic medal. It's the Olympics. Like, how many people get to go to the Olympics on the planet? And you go through all of that, like to where you're the top, and you know you're going into the rush. You get hurt, and you're training in a pool, and all of this stuff that happens for you to get to this point, to get beaten by a drug cheat. And then it's like, okay, fine, but still send me my medal now. Like, and you don't have it. That's not right.
It's insane. I almost feel like I'm a fraud.
No.
like I shouldn't even have the medal because one,
man.
I don't have it. And then two, like you didn't technically get third, but I did. I knew it. I'm telling you, when I walked out that stadium to go get drug tested, I knew they were about to go reverse something. I knew it in my spirit. I was like, someone's gonna fail their drug test.
Yeah.
But technically, you know, since you said you found out 10 years later, so you found out in 2018?
Yeah, I think it was about 2018.
That's a shame.
So then the next Olympics, you would have been awarded. So you might be awarded still in Tokyo because it would have been Tokyo.
And they got to fly you to Tokyo and give you your medal on the podium. They would fly man, to come Tokyo. On. There has to be a way to do this.
Man, I don't know with this pandemic. I don't know if I'm getting on any birds.
Yeah, in 2016, when we were in Rio, they had the medal ceremonies for the 4x4 women and some other ones. So it was going to happen in the next Olympics, which technically would have been 2020, but we didn't have one in 2020. So hopefully in Tokyo. So let's not get on the IOC just yet. But it might be coming.
We got to get to Tokyo, Chelsea. We
should be getting on a plane to Tokyo in 2021, this year.
Hey, well, we'll see, man. We'll see.
Oh, we'll man, see. I thought you were tough. A second ago, you were tough.
Yeah, I'm ready. You know what? I'm calling this person.
I did all of that. And you know what? One thing I'm not going to do, and I'll never do, I'm just not going to beg for what's mine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to beg for it. I'm not. Y'all not about to have me on my knees begging for something that I earned.
Well, here's how I look at it. I don't look at it as begging. I look at it as like someone owes me $10 and they didn't pay me. So now I'm coming to get that $10 out of your pocket right now. So just know I'm coming for this $10. I'm not begging. I'm coming to get it. Mm. We coming to get your medal. You're not begging. I didn't hear a beg. I heard, yo, y'all better get this together and figure this out. Or we might make a little bit of noise. I'm just saying, you're Olympic medalist.
Yeah, we started getting a little close. Yeah, we started getting a little bit close to getting it resolved, and then the pandemic hit. Yeah. And so it's almost like I feel I don't know. It's like almost, we go through a pandemic.
I'm just saying.
Hey, I need my medal. You know, things are going on right now. Like, I want my medal. So, you know, I feel like that's not even like the time either. So I'm in a weird place.
Yeah, but like, look, man, they can print those medals like stamps. They can send you a medal. They can do it if they want to. It's not, they have hundreds of them in a warehouse ready to be stamped with the current year on it. Whatever they do, I'm just saying, they can mm-hmm. they can throw it express mail, FedEx, UPS, wherever, from wherever they're at, they can figure it out. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna inquire. I don't have any power, but it annoys me, so I'm gonna ask around.
You have a voice.
I appreciate you. Have power.
No problem. You know, this podcast start getting 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 downloads. I bet you get your medal then.
Don't worry. Right. It's me.
Hey, y'all better download it now. Click subscribe.
I told you to download. You say you don't even know how to use the apps on your phone.
No, I'm subscribed on YouTube. I'm subscribed on YouTube.
Hey, YouTube.
I've been hitting them likes on cool. the videos.
I prefer iTunes. So now, I wanted to ask you about 2012 Olympics, because you had a pretty bad injury. That was a career-ending injury for you, wasn't it? In 2012?
No, so we didn't even talk about that injury. So you know, the games and everything ended, that's 2008. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the other thing, too. So just got fourth of the games, right? I couldn't get in no meets in circuit.
What?
Yes, I couldn't get in. I couldn't get in any meets. I'm just like,
what? The Olympic bronze medal would have had you.
Right.
But you're still a Jamaican. You were still a Jamaican national champion. So you're the top jumper from Jamaica. You should have still been able to get in some meets.
Yeah, but you know, this is a lot of moving factors, man. A lot of moving factors.
Too many politics in this game.
Yeah. That's really what it came down to. So didn't get in any meets. So, you know, we shut it down for the season, and I normally take a month off, like just a complete month just to rest, rejuvenate our bodies. Cause you know, we just go so hard. So I took my month off. And then, you know, it's time to start training again in September. I started jogging. I was like, my back hurts. Wasn't really sure like what's going on. Like my back's hurting. And then, you know, just kept training, just not really being able to do much. Just kind of going back in the pool. I just didn't know what was going on. But, you know, being at the Gamecock that I am, you know, I'm just pushing through things. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to push through it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm starting to do a repeat 200s. I'm doing all kind of crazy stuff. And I was just like, you know what? Something's not right. I go to the doctor and he's like, let me order you an MRI. So I get the MRI and he comes back and I follow up my follow-up visit. He's like, you got to stop running right now. He was like, your L5 is fractured. Your bones are bleeding. He was like, I got to put you in a body cast. I was like, what? This is now where I'm ranked. Not like just your place. You know, we're at world ranking at this point. I'm ranked 6th in the world, you know, just came off the Olympic Games, and you're telling me I have to stop running or put me in a body cast? I remember just leaving the doctor's office, called my mom. I was just crying hysterically. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And I'm like, he's talking about my bones are bleeding. So like, I end up going to a follow-up appointment where they have to literally put me in a body cast. It's from my chest down, and it goes all the way, wraps all the way around to my tailbone, and I have to wear it 23 hours a day. I can only take it off for an hour to take a shower. That's it. And I was in it for 6 months.
Aye, aye, aye.
Went back to the doctor. He's like, nah. He's like, it's not right. I was in it for another 6 months. So I was in a body cast for a year. I was like, I just can't believe this is happening. But I was like, you know what? We're going to figure this out. So I moved back. So I ended up moving to Texas. I moved back to Atlanta. I'm back training with Dwight and everything. And everything's going good. Huh?
Training.
Yeah. Yeah. I start training again. Mm. I start training again. Everything like it's, I went to rehab. I rehabbed with some awesome people. Got my back strong.
After a year,
able to start training. Yeah.
Oof.
After a year, I started training again. And everything was going really well. Like, training was going really well. But the issue with a lot of us athletes is we're just overzealous, you know, like,
Push too fast, too hard.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I could, that ain't heavy. I'm going to lift that. So it was, I think it was the week before the opener. I think we had the meet they have in El Paso. So I was like, you know, it's time to start putting some weight on. I'm used to lifting really heavy. So there was some baby weights. I threw it up, whatever. And I felt good. And then the next day I had that, like, you know, my back's hurting again. I'm like, oh, what's going on? But I'm like, I got a track meet this weekend. So I'm going to jump. So, so get to El Paso. My back's hurting. And I was like, you know what? I was like, this is probably going to be the last jump of my career. I said, this is probably my last jump. I popped so many pills. Don't do this, kids. Don't do it. But I popped so many ibuprofen so that, like, I couldn't feel anything. And went down the runway. I jumped a foot behind the board, still jumped 20 foot, like three or something like that. So I know I just jumped 21. But then after that, it was over. Went back to the doctor. He's like, you fractured your L4 now.
Yo.
He's like, you're done. He was like,
wrap it up.
So he's like, listen, he's like, here's your options. He was like, we can rehab again. He said, but what I'm going to tell you as a professional, I have to let you know, if you keep getting these CAT scans over your ovaries, it could mess up your ovaries to have kids. So he's like, you've already had one. He's like, that's not something you want to do again. And I was like, I want to have a family one day, or I can keep running. So I chose my family. I said, you know what? That'll just be, you know, I'm going to bow out. Not the way I wanted to leave the sport. I definitely didn't want to leave the sport like that. But you know what? I'm really grateful just for all the experiences, all the people I've met, all the places I've been able to go to. And you just got to sometimes just be grateful. Grateful for what you have. It just wasn't in my cards for whatever reason. You know, I didn't get my 23 legal. But, you know, it's okay. It's okay. You know, you just got to pick up, move on. And you just, you know, tell people your stories. You just try to help people whichever way you can. And this is what you got to do. Well, you know, I'm not going to cry over spilt milk. Nothing I can do about that.
Well, here's a beautiful family now too.
I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, and you have a beautiful family now too.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So, you know, I you only make but so much money in track. Like, you're not like, I'm making millions of dollars. Like, I go adopt a few kids. Like, no, like, I'm gonna disgracefully bow out.
Well, you know what though? Still, it's you make a good point. I think a lot of times we get caught up on, you know, we make our goals and we're so stuck on them because as athletes, you're so determined. But it's not always about that goal. It's you tell a story and it's a great story and journey and trials and tribulations and overcoming. And there's some, you know, there's loss and there's victory as well. And that's all a part of it. And, you know, I always tell people, if you don't shoot for that high goal, then you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to take any step. If you don't take any steps towards it, you don't get anywhere. But if you take steps towards it, even if you fall short and you fail and you don't hit that ultimate goal, you're the fourth best long jumper in the world when you don't succeed. You know, and that's still something to be proud of. It's exceptional and it's not something to just shrug off. Like, it's a real thing. You know, not everyone can get an Olympic medal. This is, three people on the planet. Right. On the planet. So, you know, it's something big.
Yep. So, you know, I've come to terms with it, you know. It was really tough when it happened. I was in a dark place. Like, I didn't want to see track. I didn't want to hear track. I didn't want to see no track friends. I was just like, I just wanted to crawl under like a rock. But, you know, I'm over it now where I can, you know, just come back and enjoy the sport. So I'm in a happy place and I'm okay with it. You know, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. You said you're always busy, right? What have you been keeping busy doing?
Man, I made a decision about 5 years ago. After I finished running track, I got a really good corporate job working in the dental industry. And after I had my son, you know, that I want the best for my kid type thing just kicked into me, right? So I was like, you know what? Ain't nobody gonna take care of my kid like me. So, you know, I made a decision to leave my job and stay home and take care of my kids. So that was a huge decision because it was a huge financial blow. But you know what? I don't regret it. One, I'm never one to chase money. I want to make sure that I'm happy. And it has allowed me to just do other things now. So I recently started a company, well, several companies. It's called Sambar Ross. So I'm an event coordinator, but we also have a dessert branch and a rental branch as well. So we service the event industry in three different areas. So we've been really busy. We're growing really fast. I'm just really excited about like where it's headed.
That's good.
Congrats. That's
and
how great.
People get in contact with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So we're on Instagram. At Sambar Ross.
No, it keeps, you know, it's like a delay. So I keep talking, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, so we're on Instagram at Signed by Ross. So you know, if I will sign off on it, it ain't about to make it. So so that's kind of where we got the name for it. But that's where we can be reached. We're working on getting all the website and everything up. We're just really growing faster than I can handle, just to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. And you service which area?
So we're in the Atlanta area. So we service like all of Atlanta. All the suburbs of Atlanta. We are thinking of possibly expanding past this, but you know, those are just some goals that we have moving forward once we get a good infrastructure set here. So that's something that's in the works.
Yeah, I see that Olympian look in your eyes. So yeah, I can imagine what's gonna happen with this. You're like, yeah, you know, we're thinking about possibly expand. Sure.
Yeah, you know, there's always that plan. You already know in my head, I'm already thinking about where we're already at. You know,
yeah,
we just gotta get it going. Just gotta get it going. We gotta get that plan. We gotta get that training in, you know, get over those hurdles and get it going.
Hey, you're always an athlete. That's an identity.
Always.
You know?
Always. I want to win.
It's not a hobby. It's just who you are.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's what made me so good at my corporate job, because like, for example, we have a whole board. I'm in sales, right? We have a whole board and everybody has to go up there and write your sales. Man, so you already know.
Yeah.
I just go up there, put them numbers on that board, went back to my desk. These hate me. But I brought that same energy, you know, to my job because I want to win. Mm-hmm. I want to be the best. So, you know, I'm going to do it the right way, but just know that I'm gunning for you. Know that. Know it's coming.
You got me kind of hype now.
Man, I'm always hype.
Yeah. I'm always hype. Remember that too.
I'm going to race to put my shoes on.
I remember that, man. SC days. But Chelsea, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and tell us your story. Wow, definitely interesting.
We're going to work on getting you this medal.
Oh, don't trip. Yeah, I've been seeing how people have been commenting under these videos and stuff. Yeah, I think someone's going to be like, how do we get this medal? You know, I'm all for it. But no, seriously,
listen,
though.
I got my bodysuit ready for my victory lap.
Yeah,
it's still fit.
Yeah, you might just be surprised what we pull off, man, because that's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. So thank you again. We'll do this again sometime. See what you're doing. See when your Signed by Ross has become a huge empire. I want updates on all of that.
Yeah, don't forget the little people.
Yeah, don't forget the little people.
Never, because guess what? It's the little people. It's my first gig. You know what I mean? No matter how small it is. That's how I got here. That's how I got here. Everybody knows that I appreciate anyone who has helped me, if it's just encouragement, if it's advice, if it's, you know, brought me a pair of spikes, whatever. I'll shout you out. I'll never forget you. I remember my first coach, Andy Towie, when I was in third grade, 7 years old. You know, so I'm definitely one of those people. I appreciate everybody in my life, everybody who's had a hand in just me becoming the woman that I am today. So I never forget the little people. That's how you got there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right. Well, until next time. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Adrian. I appreciate you guys.
See ya. Yes, it was great meeting you. Have a great time.
You too. Later, guys.
Bye.